The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Pod Yourself the Wire.
The Wire podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Wire
and talk about it.
Thank you once again for listening to the world's only The Wire podcast. Please make sure to give us 5 stars and a review on all of the podcast apps stores that you guys have, like Apple or the Spotify or the other ones. Can you give stars on Stitcher? I don't know, but if you can, do it. And also, feel free. This is a new thing I'm asking to do, Vince. If you're someone who is still subscribed to Pod Yourself the Wire instead of the main feed, Pod Yourself a Gun, go ahead and write a review on that, telling everyone on Pod Yourself the Wire to go subscribe to the other feed, because we're putting it all in one feed now.
Yeah, we're trying to cultivate like really tech savvy listeners by just fucking with you guys this whole time.
I know. I keep asking them to switch feeds, and I'm so sorry, but listen, you know, we're learning as we're going, and the idea of making a new feed for every show is killing me. So once again, please leave a review on Pod Yourself the Wire, telling people to subscribe to Pod Yourself again. Okay, today, Vince and I and a guest are going to be talking about, from season 2 of The Wire, episode 5, Undertow. And our guest today
Who's our guest, Matt?
Oh, I'll tell you. He is an analyst, NBA analyst at The Ringer. He does podcasts. He does The Young Turks. He's friends with my wife, Francesca. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, our guest today is Big Waz Lambre.
What's up, fellas? Very happy to be on with you brothers today. Super excited to talk about The Wire and bust some jokes. Tell a couple of dick jokes in between.
There's nothing but dick jokes, especially this season.
Keep them coming. See what I did there?
Hey, that was good. That was sexual, Vince.
Yeah.
Good job. Big Waz, tell me, are you a fan of The Wire? Do you like it? Have you seen it?
I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with the product that the company that I work for, The Ringer, puts out, but like it's almost like a prerequisite for the job that you have to be into The Wire. In fact, like one of my favorite things about Bill Simmons, who founded The Ringer back when he was at ESPN, was that he would weave in Wire references to his NBA column, which felt revolutionary at the time. But the thing is, like, he sort of invented the form that way, and that everybody weaves in pop culture or whatever into whatever medium they're using. But Bill, at the time, I just thought it was so cool. You know, like, he would, you know, compare guys, young upshot players, to Marlo Stanfield.
Yeah, this is the Avon Barksdale of the NFL.
Yeah, 100%. And so, you know, like my relationship with The Wire is from the very start, you know, from the first season. I was watching from the first season.
Did you watch it when it was actually, when it came out?
When it was actually airing, yeah. My older cousin put me on to the show. Shouts to Pat. But we were watching it just on some surface level drug dealers, cocaine, guns,
killing, all the good stuff, fun stuff.
The investigated by cops. Like, we were watching it for the very surface level things that were being depicted. Obviously, when you get older, you sort of realize that there's a way bigger message being told here. And the message is told quite expertly, I must say, like a really deft hand. And so, yeah, that's basically my relationship with The Wire. And I've been watching it intermittently ever since.
Which NBA player would you say is cheese?
Oh, my God. Oh, this is easy. There's a player on the Memphis Grizzlies named Dylan Brooks. Mm-hmm. He's got a horrible haircut, and he's constantly picking fights with people. He's constantly out of order. His opinion of himself and his abilities are way higher than that of everybody else around him who has eyes. And so, yeah, Dylan Brooks is definitely the cheese of in so many ways
impressed.
The NBA.
You're hired.
Yeah. No, I mean, I always, when I think of cheese, like one of the things that sticks out to me is the fact that he ends up being Prop Joe's nephew. And so I was thinking like, all right, well, so which Nepo baby in the NBA would he be? But the NBA
there's a lot
has
of Nepo babies.
There's a lot of Nepo babies, but the difference is like I have respect for them because you have to overcome the fact that your dad was a great basketball player. So it's actually more respectable to be a Nepo baby.
Yeah, and it's look, I think it helps to have resources in sports, no matter what, like access to training and even like putting yourself, your parents could be like, oh, we'll just move you to another school where you could play against better people all the time and shit like that. But
yeah, let's be real. Luke Walton probably would not have been in the NBA had he not been a Walton. But he was a great passer.
Oh, I mean, it does
incredible feel for the game.
The same that it does in every industry. I mean, maybe less because you actually have to produce as a basketball, as a sports star. But like, it'll get you a few extra swings. Because people are like, they have it in their head like, oh, like they know you have, the potential is like more assumed than I think it would be with some other person
and I
that
think
no one knows.
Like something that's even more tangible than that is just access to training. Mm-hmm. Like your dad can pay for a dedicated coach, like a coach who just works with you on ball handling, a coach who just works with you on shooting. Like, and these motherfuckers cost thousands of dollars. Yeah. You know, annually. So, yeah, having resources helps.
I guess for me, I'm like...
Go figure.
I look at it and I go like, but if you get really, really good, at some point I go like, okay, you are now... you're better than a Nepo baby. You're like Steph Curry.
You're still a Nepo baby. It's not like a pejorative. It's just telling you like, all right.
It's just the truth.
You know, it's just the truth.
And you know, it's different with NBA basketball, and I'm not just saying this because this is a game that I love, industry that I cover, that I'm a part of, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, let's face it, anybody could work in Gossip Girl. Like, realistically, anybody could perform the tasks required to be an actor on that show. It's a little bit different than being Steph Curry. You know what I mean?
Like, exactly.
It's just a little different.
Yeah, no, honestly, it's like I have more respect for Nepo baby like athletes than I do pretty much any, because in any other field, like what, you're a businessman because your dad's a businessman.
Right. Oh, you're so good at hedge funding.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Because your dad was such an expert hedge funder.
Exactly. You know, it took hours and hours of practice every day after school to hedge fund at the top level.
It's like, come on.
Yeah. So being that you're somebody who watched The Wire from the beginning and then also from that, you know, that first, that surface level that I think we all watched The Wire at when we first saw it, how big of a shock was season two for you? Did you like season two? Did you dislike season two when you first watched it? Or did you, and have you come around to it now?
So we all thought it sucked in real time. We was like, this is horrible. This is boring. This is slow. Facts. Why is no corners getting shot up with Uzis? What the fuck is happening? Where's the dope on the table, essentially? Mm-hmm. Which is a theme that comes up on the show, which is quite meta, honestly.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, when I got older, I was like, this is better than I thought, but I haven't come around to the hipster take where it's like, well, actually, this is actually one of the best seasons. Like, no, I'm not that stupid.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But I recognize that they have to show, like, how across racial lines, people are getting crushed in the working and poor classes, right, by our system. And they're showing you, like, even the white people.
Yeah.
This is how you know it's bad, folks. The white people are getting screwed. And so I recognize the importance of showing that through line that, like, you know, this crosses a racial, gender, whatever divide. Everybody who's in this working poor class has been grounded into dust.
Yeah.
And the show is like, we're going to show you how that happens. And, like, granted, like, it's just not as compelling as the street shit.
Yeah.
It's just not. I don't see how you can say that it is, but it's necessary and it's well done.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like if you watch the show enough, and we've said this before on it, but, like, it there comes a point at which you are, you stop being as interested in the kind of, like, the surface level, the violence, the guns, the cops and robbers stuff. And you start getting into, like, the nitty gritty of, like, okay, what's actually happening? And so it goes from a show that's about, like,
how does
a
container move across the docks and actually, like, get to a warehouse? Yeah, it's
They get, but also
insanely granular with that shit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it turns into, like if you love a fantasy novel where you're just like, the elves are originally from the Undying Lands, and because they're from there, they do not die. But when Sauron came around, and then you become a nerd about it, except you're a nerd about, like, the docks, which is super lame. But at the same time, I have found that in my rewatch of season two, the one thing I'm really, that's really sticking out to me is the parallels between a, like, working class, working poor community and, you know, their turn to crime, as well as the, like, you know, the project's turn to crime. And, what I also enjoy about it is that it doesn't do the thing where it's like, see, class is all that matters. Race is just, you know, a fake thing.
It's just a construct.
It's just a construct, right? As if there's no consequences to the construct.
Right.
And you see that in this episode, especially with Ziggy, who is, you know, fucking up the package he got from Cheese and immediately just starts throwing racial slurs around.
Jesus, what the fuck happened? Fucking niggers got me.
Bought a fucking package, didn't you? Didn't you?
From who?
White Mike?
Some Cheese up on Wolf and Ashley. A few ounces, you know?
Why not White Mike?
Fuck Mike. You know how he'd be.
Why the fuck would I know how he'd be?
Yeah, and Ziggy is so obviously the most incompetent person in the show.
Yeah.
Quite possibly in the show's history.
Yeah. Like, worse than Bubbles. At least Bubbles knows how to tie a knot.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, Bubbles is a fucking longshoreman. It's kind of crazy. But yeah, that is again, like, Ziggy, even he has more chances than anybody, because guess what? Your dad is at the top of the union, right? Like, he's not one of the workers who's dying and looking for work every single day. Like, you kind of have a safety net because of who your father is.
Yeah.
And, you know, the working humps, the rank and file of the union, they, even though his dad is a boss, they recognize he's like, this is the boss's kid. He's a shithead.
Yeah.
Everybody knows it. Everybody treats him that way. And the only person who doesn't is related to him by blood.
Yeah. So, all right. So, which NBA player is Ziggy Sabatka?
Oof. Ziggy Sabatka. That is a... Oh, my goodness.
It's almost... Yeah, you have
just
to be careful.
Just comical incompetence?
Yeah.
Man, that's tough.
I'm going Russell Westbrook.
I mean, I feel like if you're in the NBA, it's kind of hard to be a Ziggy.
Like, it's tough because, like, when you're as bad, you just don't get to play anymore. You know, like, you just don't. Even as a young guy, you know, because there's, what's his name? Killian Hayes on the Detroit Pistons. He's a young guy. He came in. He was, like, a top 10 pick. And those kind of guys have to get some time to try to prove themselves. Right. But in the meantime, they're throwing up all over themselves. And just it's just a mess. Like, just poop in the bed. It's just nasty. But eventually, he's just going to stop getting chances. Yeah. He might just be out of the league. He might have to get his passport and go to China. Do you know what I'm saying? To hoop. That's why it's a little different.
Yeah. There's money for basketball over there.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know. Nothing wrong with playing in China. I would love to go to China and play. Although I feel like I would get in trouble because I talk a lot of shit.
No chance.
But this is not a podcast about talking shit on the CCP and Xi Jinping. No. this is a podcast about The Wire. And we, of course, cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song.
When you walk to the garden, you got a
pod.
Oh, man. Well, I beg your
pod.
Walk the straight
podcast.
Track. If you
pod.
With Jesus, he's gonna save
the docks.
You gotta keep it
Polish. Pod.
Down in the hole.
Season 2.
All right, ladies and gentlemen and everyone else today. Once again, we're talking about from Season 2 of The Wire, Episode 5, Undertow. This episode came out June 29th, 2003. Vince, can you read the synopsis that is definitely straight from IMDb?
Ziggy Sabatka deludes himself into believing it is White Boy Day in Baltimore.
That's right. That is the synopsis. And Vince, what was happening at the time that this episode came out?
That's right, Matt. You know, we're trying to evaluate some culture here, and you cannot evaluate culture divorced from the context in which it was released. And so we're going to put some of that context back in with a little something we like to call the back in the day machine.
It's a bad time for newspapers. The news hole is shrinking as advertising dollars continue to decline.
There ain't no back in the day.
Machine tells the tale, son.
All right, we're going all the way back, as Matt said, to June 29th, 2003. Few of the things that were happening. Katharine Hepburn had just died at the age of 96.
Shit.
Yeah, R.I.P.
Wow, all right. 6 years. What a run.
ESPN reported
Hepburn is the one.
She's the shaky one, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's Audrey Hepburn. She's the one with the tremolo bar.
Right. She's the one with the tremolo bar. Yeah.
Other news, ESPN reported that Kobe Bryant was planning to opt out of his Lakers contract at the end of the 2003-2004 season. Mm. He was 24 years old.
And that's all that was going on in 2003 regarding Kobe Bryant. Right. I know no other news. We shall not talk about other news.
Mm-mm. No, we never talk about it anymore. Lance Armstrong was preparing for his fifth straight Tour de France.
Oh, hell yeah.
Which I'm sure
that goes well. That was legit. Yeah.
Those are, you know, a legit win. That no one can dispute.
Yeah. And I got a couple of news stories to read for you. There were signs of the times. This one is entitled Hussein's Life in Photographs. As most presidents do, Iraq's Saddam Hussein had an official photographer who documented his life. In this case, his personal life as well as his public life. The recent retrieval of Hussein's home videos and photos, however, makes clear that he was not just any president. In one photo, Hussein tenderly kisses an unhappy grandson named Ali. Ali's mother is Hussein's daughter, Ragdad. Ali's father, Hussein Kamal, was executed by the tender grandfather, Saddam Hussein.
Oof. I could see why the kid was unhappy when he kissed him.
Another photo finds Hussein searching for truffles in the desert. If anyone could find truffles in the desert, when they usually thrive more in wooded landscapes, it would be the all-powerful dictator.
You know he had people just throwing truffles in sand.
Right, yeah. No, he had one guy who was just his designated truffle pig who could only oink.
It was another relation that he tied. Yeah,
his grandnephew or something.
His grandnephew he had on a leash. Fun.
Where are the truffles, Piggy?
Find the truffles. That's fun.
Though Hussein's fate remains a mystery, 36-year-old Ragdad has told a British newspaper that her father remains alive. He was, she said, a good father and a good grandfather.
So we're at the point now, Saddam has not been caught, nope. But he is in
He's
hiding.
He's presumed dead at this point.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Another story, this one, real slice of the times from the New York Post. Hey, pal, why Friendster.com is causing a frenzy.
Oh, boy.
Would you like to be friends with a member of the Strokes? How about one of the stars of The Amazing Race? Mm-hmm. You can. Just log on to Friendster.com, a three-month-old website that currently has 730,000 members, according to 33-year-old founder Jonathan Abrams. He says that 20,000 of those are New Yorkers. Typically, when one person joins, they invite their friends to become members. Each member posts a profile, and other Friendsters can see who their friends are friends with and make new ones.
Oh.
However, you must send a formal request to someone you'd like to be friends with, and they may decline or ignore your solicitation.
God, this is written like the scene in this episode where Nikki is like asking him how Google works, where he's just like, so you just type things in and it tells you?
So you just type that shit in there and ask it for an answer?
It gives you answers, Zig?
It just answers your questions, Zig? Hey, can you ask what happens after you die? Does it know that?
Beneath your profile sits testimonials from your friends. It's like a yearbook, says 23-year-old elementary school teacher Elizabeth Goodman. But Lewitin thinks the testimonials are the worst part of Friendster because people complain that they're not heaped with enough praise. They say, that's not good enough. Next thing, you're writing a testimonial that sounds like this person should be elected Pope. Lewitin also thinks there's a lot of one-upmanship on the site. People are competing to see how many people they have on their friends list, he says.
Wow.
At last count, Josh
so
from The Amazing Race.
So social media has been the same since 2003. Like literally nothing has changed.
Yeah. Nothing has changed. Well, it's the exact same thing.
This part has changed. At last count, Josh from The Amazing Race had 26. Albert from The Strokes had 6 friends and no testimonials.
Yeah, that is
that's tough.
That is definitely different now. But yeah, no, it's the exact same thing. It's just except for
self-aggrandizement.
Yeah, yeah.
Performative competition shit. Yeah. Stupid shit.
I love like proto clout chasing is very fun.
Oh, here's the
it seems like everyone's trying to have more friends.
Yeah.
What's that about? Yeah. It's like wait 20 years.
Here's the kicker line. I don't know what the hell I'm doing sometimes, Lewitin says. I mean, do you really want to make friends with someone who spends all their time surfing Friendster?
Nice, dude. Nice. Wow. Yeah.
This is
I feel attacked.
Yeah, yeah. You have to remember this is back in the day when a parasocial relationship was seen as a weird thing as opposed to 90% of my relationships now. Yeah. Oh, all of my friends are avatars on the internet.
2003, I think people were already on MySpace, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
MySpace had started, and when I was in high school, I remember a couple of girls were on this thing called Zanga.
Yeah.
Which I was like, I don't know what shit. It was like, no, you just like leave a note and you do this.
Yeah,
and I'm
yeah.
just like, yeah, that don't sound like something I want to do.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when everyone in high school got into LiveJournal and they were just like, oh, do you have a LiveJournal? I was like, no, I don't know what it's about. They're like, oh, it's so fun, do it. And I never wound up doing it. And like fast forward like a month later, someone was like using LiveJournal to just bully the shit out of someone. And I was like, oh, it seems like the internet's bad. So I don't think I will join LiveJournal because it is for bullying. And luckily, bullying stopped right there after I said that.
Ended.
Yeah. Gone forever.
Yep. So that's, I think we're caught up. I think we got all the cultural context we need. That was the back in the day machine.
Okay. So that's what is happening at the time.
Rest in peace, Saddam Hussein.
I know. Yeah. RIP to a real one. You got Katharine Hepburn and then Saddam. What a blow.
It's tough.
It's tough. It's a tough time in America for all of our friends. But yeah, just real quick, the Balmer B stories, in which I do a parody song of the synopsis of the episode. I didn't have time. I have a baby now, guys, and I had to take care of my baby. But at the end of the episode, you will hear this song. But for now, I will just read it for you. It is to the tune of Lose Yourself by Eminem, which has just come out. His palms are sweaty, knees weak, arms are stringy. Got Frogger on his corner already, punking Ziggy. He's angry, and Froggy don't have his money ready. He's fucked up, and Cheese won't be forgetting what he lent out. Cheese gang surrounds him now. He opens the car, but Ziggy won't come out. He slaps him around, says his jacket's worth 2,000. They throw him down, steal Zig's calm morale. Snap back to reality. Oop, better ask Nicky for some cash money. He fucked up the package. Nicky can't lend him money. No, he don't have it. He don't have it. He knows his cousin's on the ropes. It don't matter. He's broke. He lives in his mom's home. His job's sad, and he knows Spiros needs those chemicals that when he... All right. The rhythm's hard.
I don't envy you having to do this for real.
Shut up. His job's sad, and he knows Spiros needs those chemicals. That's when he talks to the Greek again, yo. They trust Nicky better. Go capture those cans and hope Zig don't fuck it up. And then there's the chorus. And yeah, so that's...
Hey man, that is pretty damn good to be telling the story of episode 5, season 2 of The Wire, and the cadence of Eminem.
And I feel he's relevant.
He's a pro about this now, you know.
I take it very seriously. I'm a seasoned synopsis.
He's a parody song veteran.
I'm the Weird Al of The Wire and The Sopranos. Now
you are the
the
fucking
Weird Al.
Tom, who's the famous veteran? I don't know.
Veteran?
Yeah.
Like Army
a military
veteran?
You're like the
George
John
W.
McCain?
Bush.
You're the John McCain of Weird Al's.
All right.
Yeah, that's what I was going for.
I like people who weren't captured. All right. So moving on, let's talk about today's episode. Today's episode is a lot of things are going on. Ziggy and Nicky are both dealing with poverty in very interesting ways. Ziggy is dealing drugs and
gentrification is a big problem everywhere in Baltimore, as we're finding out.
Nicky is dealing with trying to buy a house for him and his baby mama and little girl, and finds out that the real estate market's on fire.
Guys, most people, when they move out of their crib because they want to be able to, you know, spend some alone time with their woman, like, they don't try to buy a house.
They might
try to rent a room with somebody else, roommates.
He barely knew how Google worked, so he clearly didn't have, like, Realtor.com or Redfin or fucking the
West
other
Side
one.
Rentals?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. You know, he is... It's funny the amount of things that Nicky is clueless about in this season, because he doesn't know how a digital camera works like 2 episodes ago. He's like, hey, there's not even filming there.
He showed up to an open house because his aunt used to live there. I don't think he's super plugged into the real estate market in Baltimore.
Yeah. He stole a bunch of cameras and got $2,000 and was like, time to buy a house. And it's like, I know that, you know, the inflation stuff is a thing, but I don't think you can get it.
He's cosplaying as grown man, and he doesn't know how to do it yet.
Yeah, so he's having trouble, dealing with his own poverty, and so that's going on with that storyline.
Meanwhile, Ziggy's out there filming the pilot episode to Euphoria on one of the corners.
Oh,
she's got a fucking ashtray out there and whatever mumbly dude's name is.
Yeah, man. Yeah, Ziggy is introducing us for the very first time the white side of the street in Baltimore that deals drugs, and it is an incredible sight to behold, because you're just like, half of me looks at, you know, like hood white kids like that on TV, and I'm just like, God, that's so embarrassing. but then at the same time, I'm like, But you know that that's a thing. You know what I mean?
Well, like, it's not even that I know. Like, these are kids that I went to high school with.
Yeah, right, like, right.
In New York City, like, if you've ever met, you know, what they call outer borough scum, the ethnic whites, if you will, of places like, you know, Howard Beach or Bensonhurst, Brooklyn. Like, these guys, first, here's the funny thing. Here's the best thing about those dudes. Mm-hmm. Not only do they refer to black people pejoratively as nigga, they call each other.
Yeah.
Niggas. Yes.
It is.
Well, then other people used to have
a mind fuck.
Other people had really a term for them, and I don't know what like the term, the non-offensive term for them anymore.
Wigger?
Is. Yeah. Like, what's the non-offensive version of that?
So like amongst people in my, like the if you're trying to say it in a way that isn't pejorative, you will refer to somebody as a white Mike. In the sense that every black person knows a white guy, especially in New York, a white guy named Mike who's like really into hip hop, dates black chicks, blah blah blah, and like his nickname is White Mike. So like the good version of that is like somebody who's like not self-consciously into underground hip hop and like really into the culture in a way that isn't self-conscious.
Right.
It's like the cool sort of harmless version of it. And then there's like, you know, these Italian kids from places like Bayside, Queens, who were just like fake tough. And again, like literally calling each other the N-word.
Yeah.
Like, it's, nigga, stop.
Yeah.
Bro, nigga, stop, bro. Stop being a fucking idiot, bro.
What's crazy about it to me is like, I think about some of the people that I knew growing up who I know that they, as soon as they went to school with, you know, it was like LA public schools, right? So you had like kids from across the socioeconomic spectrum, some of which who were like poor white kids who would grow up in the hood, and then they would talk in that way. And I would never catch them slipping. I would never catch them, you know, like code switching. And so I was like, I think that's just how they talk. Like, I don't know. Like, because part of me wants to go, like, come on, man. You're putting on a thing, right? And they'd be, and they would be like, no, what you talking about? I'd be like, okay, all right. I don't know. It's like, I feel like for me, I'm like, well, who am I to tell someone how they should talk?
No, but Matt, but guess what? It happens in the reverse for me. Like, if I meet a black person who, you know, is from an affluent background or whatever and really didn't grow up around working class black people at all. Yeah. The way they talk, I'm really going to be like, bro, come on. You're doing this. You're taking this Wayne Brady shit too far, bro. Like, they're not around right now. Like, let it go. You know what I'm saying? It's a thing for sure.
It is a thing. And I mean, I feel like Froggy, the character of Froggy in this episode is fantastic.
Because he's not acting. I don't think that's acting.
No, not at all.
There's no way somebody could act that well.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly right. Because like with The Wire, they were casting a lot of like real Baltimore people in the show. And I look at Froggy and I'm like, that's a real Baltimore white boy. Like, there's no way that this is too good.
Between this and Euphoria, like, my question is, like, does every like white drug dealer have like a 8-year-old that just like sort of hangs out with them and is his his like silent hype man? Like every like white drug dealer has their own teller. Like, they're the pen. I mean, I guess they're both kind of tellers because those guys are like super inarticulate, but
And you know, and the reason how I know this guy is not acting is because like the good sort of, and I'm saying good like with heavy air quotes here, version of doing this in the actor way is Jamie Kennedy, Malibu's Most Wanted.
Right.
It's like he's very conscious of what he's doing, and how ridiculous the notion might be, you know, but like that's not this.
No,
it's
dead serious. And I really love the scene where Carve and Kima are like, they're staking out that corner, and you kind of just you hear Froggy just talking. I have a clip of that.
You want to time up with some damn crib trying to play out for the bitch? Say, y'all just here fucked up because I'm out here getting done with needs done. Feel me, nigga?
Yeah. Even motherfuckers take everything, don't they?
You know what I'm saying, Dirk? You want to be my nigga? You got some whipping.
I kind of like the way he plays it in the scene with Ziggy where he just doesn't. Ziggy's like talking shit to him and he just doesn't say anything.
Oh, that's a fantastic scene, and that is our opening scene of this episode. You see, Ziggy has once again put a package on the street, and despite Nikki telling him not to, immediately the first thing that happens is we see that it's going to get fucked up for him. I have a clip of that.
God damn it, Frog! When you work a G-Pack for a guy, a kickback's supposed to be 500.
Stash got hit, yo.
I ain't hearing that shit. I want my fucking money. You best know I ain't playing, motherfucker. Okay, that's how you want it? Fine. But when I roll back past here tomorrow, money gonna be right. Or you gonna see. You gonna see who you fucking with. I look like a fucking punk.
A few moments later.
Please take it easy. I'm working on it. But my people, you know.
What the fuck you think this is, huh, man? What? Oh. You think this supposed to get played some other way?
Embarrassing. Just
so
tough.
I feel like the open question is Frog lying about the package getting hit, or is he just fucking over Ziggy because
he's
is he telling the truth,
Ziggy,
or is he just fucking over Ziggy because he knows that Ziggy doesn't have any muscle?
He's just lying. Yes. Yeah. Like, he understands that Ziggy is like a pure white bread who is not of this world and would have no idea how to figure anything out because he's not of it, you know? And he understands he has no muscle.
Yeah. He's got no... What is he going to do? Like, literally, what is Ziggy going to do about it? That's kind of like the whole thing with Ziggy. Ziggy forgets that, like, a big part...
You know what he should have done? He should have just walked in there and shot that little kid.
Yeah, no, I mean, hey, that would have been...
Well, that would have worked. People would be like, oh, shit. I don't know what this guy's capable of.
For real. Yeah. No, but, like, Ziggy forgets that, like, one of the, like, most important parts of being a gangster is being a part of a gang. Like, you need other
crucial aspect.
It's a crucial aspect. You need
there's a group of people who are willing to dole out violence.
Yes.
Step one, have a
friend. At least willing to project the threat of violence credibly.
Yeah.
That's what's most important. It needs to be a credible threat.
Yeah.
There's no threat that Ziggy can lobby can be seen as credible.
Yeah, because he can't even in his attempt to talk tough, it sounds like he is just like he got like a drug dealer slang translation, you know, fucking like dictionary, and was just like, you know, money better be right or you gonna see who you fucking with. It's like, bruh.
Yeah, it's like if Siri was reading that dialogue for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's weird. So Ziggy's a weird character because, like, I'm with you, Waz. I appreciate this season, but I can see why people don't like it as much. And I think there are, and I think a big part of that is Ziggy and Nikki. Like, I don't think they're great actors necessarily, but it's also hard with Ziggy because it's like he's supposed to be playing a guy who's not a good actor too. Like this is supposed to be him putting on a not convincing performance. So he's sort of this like blue collar dude, theater kid hybrid, which is again, I said it on like the first episode of season two, like he's sort of a unicorn. Like we don't know this character. So like, we don't really have any frame of reference for who the fuck this guy is. Cause he's sort of this confusing
combination. He's not a normal archetype.
No,
he's
a confusing combination of things. And later I think they sort of, he makes a little sense later when Frank Sabatka, does this weird, like fucking 12 Angry Men monologue to the cops and the cops are all like, what the fuck? Who are you performing for? Like you see where he gets his theatricality a little bit.
Yeah. I love that scene, by the way. I think that Frank Sabatka yelling at me might be my kink.
We took down Union Busting Ronnie.
Yeah, exactly.
And I actually weirdly,
we lived through Tricky Dick Nixon.
And I'm just like, oh, why am I feeling feelings right now?
I actually do know this like archetype a little bit. Like, I feel like I did grow up around some people who, you know, didn't like grow up in a place where like theater was acceptable thing to do for their like demographic, right. But they're very like theatrical in like a weird blue collar way. And you're like, oh shit. Like, That dude should have been an actor. What the fuck?
Right.
Yeah. No, that's
he's a
like
good
half,
performer.
Yeah. That's half of like Italian gangsters. Half of Italian gangsters just want to be actors.
Yeah.
but they, you know, it's not seen as like a masculine tough thing. So they
a big part of what you're saying, Vince, is which is true, is just like Ziggy's an attention whore.
Yeah.
And like, that's part of being a theater kid is that always want to be the center of attention. You always want everybody to be looking at you. Look at me and my dances and my all of this. And, you know, he's always performing down to like taking pictures of his dick.
Yeah, down to like showing off his dick whenever he can.
Well, because like he doesn't have the thing that like makes you cool in his demographic. Like, he's not like a big... He's not a big oaf who's good at sports, which would make you the cool guy in that.
At what point do we talk about Ziggy's dick?
And that's what I was gonna say. Like, he doesn't like but he knows he has this thing that should make him cool. But like, there's no way, like, people don't just know you for having a big dick unless you like pull it out and wave it at him.
Okay, so that's what I was saying. Like, we're meant to be impressed by the size of Ziggy's dick, right?
Yeah.
Because I was.
Yeah, oh, yeah. No, oh, 100%. No, like, the amount of times, like, I remember early in the season when they showed it, I was like, I really would like to see a full body. Because so far, I'm looking at kind of like a half-hard windsock thing, and anyone's dick can look big like that.
And again, like, if he was a jock, like, when you're a jock, you know which guy on the team has a huge dick because you're
right,
in the shower together.
You're sucking it in the shower.
Yeah, you're sucking it, yeah, you know. You know which one has a big dick because it's like your mouth starts watering and stuff. But like,
but he's not
a sports guy. Like, he's like a little weasel shithead. So like, he has to pull it out. Like, he could not start like a word of mouth.
And nobody
camping.
Would believe him if he didn't.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Because he doesn't look like he should have one, which is what
he's not
makes
exactly
his...
Pete Davidson. You know,
exactly. And it's, you know, when we finally do see the close-up of it, last episode, he put a picture of his dick on one of his co-workers. On his computer. And we finally got to see it. And I was like, oh, yeah, no, that's, yeah, wow. Okay. But yeah, Ziggy's got a big dick, but he's got a little brain. And it's unfortunate. And then so
it's unfortunate.
It is, you know, it's like, you know,
that's too bad.
Yeah, it's too bad because it's like he was born in the wrong time is the problem. He's, you know,
and I don't think he's a complete idiot. Is that he doesn't understand what his strengths are.
Right.
Yeah. Well, he was cursed to grow up in an age before OnlyFans. Like, he could have.
Yes.
Yeah, he didn't need to deal drugs. He could have just slang that hog online.
And he would have gotten all of the, not just the money, but he would have gotten all the attention that he wanted. Mm-hmm. The problem is, you know, like, every time he pulls his dick out, everyone's like, no, 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 no. And it sucks because he has to just grow up being like, I guess I'm going to be a negative attention guy because no one wants to see this and it's all I have to offer. And he wants to be cool. He wants to be, you know, he wants to be a kingpin, and he's just not. So... he tells Nikki at the bar that, you know, Cheese is going to kill him. So this is the first time we see Cheese. Cheese, of course, played by Method Man.
Has to be the best actor in Wu-Tang, right?
Oh, yeah. Well,
he's better than RZA for sure.
Yeah.
RZA's the only other person I've seen.
Well, Redman. Wait, no.
Well, Redman's, but Redman's not in Wu-Tang.
He's not Wu-Tang.
No, him and... Method Man started a group after Method Man started his solo career. So he went solo, then started a group with Red Man.
So I've never seen Old Dirty Bastard act, but I feel like he could have crushed it.
Oh my God.
Too.
I feel like you never know. Some people are characters, and it's hard to translate it.
He's the Ziggy of the Wu-Tang Clan. He's that unicorn where you're just like, man, this guy is everywhere.
So different.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm kind of torn on like Method Man's performance. I feel like he is probably the best actor in Wu-Tang Clan, but in terms of like on this show, I do feel like he's it feels like he's forcing it like a little bit.
It was his first, I think it was his first acting role.
Yeah.
And, you know, this he's surrounded by a lot of talented guys, right?
Yeah.
Like the dude Prop Joe in real life is an acting coach.
Mm-hmm. Acting coach, that's right.
You know,
yeah.
And other people like Avon,
yeah.
And what's his name?
Wood Harris.
Wood Harris. Sorry. These guys are like really good actors, right?
Yeah.
And so I think he might have been a little intimidated.
But
now, like, he's much better at it now. But yeah, the Cheese character, he's one of the few Wire people who borderline on cartoonish villainy. And just like, it's just like, all right.
Yeah.
Most characters in their evil are way more understated. Like Rawls, for 100%. Instance, you know, who is pure just middle management nightmare.
Yes, right.
But the way he plays it is so much more understated and expert.
Yeah,
well, Cheese is not meant to be like smart or a good gangster. Like he's sort of small time. He's the guy who's
like
willing...
you're burning a car, a perfectly good car.
Yeah, I know.
Well, he was the only guy that was willing to sell drugs to Ziggy, which is like. He fronted him drugs, which is probably,
you wonder if like, cause you know, people in the mob will do shit like that all the time, right?
Yeah.
Like they will front somebody a gambling debt knowing that they could just milk them and milk them and milk them and milk them. You wonder if Cheese was smart or predatory enough to know that this guy's an idiot's gonna fuck up the pack and I could just keep getting shit from him, except for the fact that he burns a car.
Yeah, that to me,
you
that,
burn
like,
money.
Yeah. In the scene where like Nikki shows up to talk with Cheese and, you know, like try to like basically parlay with him about like, here's how we can work this out for Ziggy's sake. It's almost like he mentions, it's such a weird scene for me because number one, they burn the car. They had just burned the car. The car is still on fire when that scene happens, which says to me that like, well, that's perfect timing on Nikki bad timing on Nikki's part. But also like, did he not himself think, oh yeah, that's right, I could have sold that car. Shit. Like,
sold
did he
the
not-
car, stripped it for parts if he like, you
anything.
Know, reported it so stolen. Like, you know, maybe you couldn't get, you know, the deed of sale and the title from Ziggy. All right, cool.
Yeah.
Sell the parts.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? Bubbles could have used some of that metal, man, to buy some crack.
Yeah, I know. Like, I know. It's like, as the show goes on, more and more you realize, like, probably the greatest businessman entrepreneur on the show is Bubbles, because he's the one who's like, I can turn anything
into
money. Enough money for heroin.
Bubbles knows how to tie sailor's knots.
Yeah. I know. It's very impressive. It is great. Speaking of being really good at turning money into heroin, we have to take a quick break. So please buy these products and services. You know, the more you do, the more money we have for drugs. So stick around. We will be right back.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. Okay.
So can we get into Bubbles on the docks yet?
Yes, let's do it. We're ready. We're ready to talk about McNulty's whole arc in this episode.
I like this scene because it begins with Bubbles scoping out a barbecue. And also that leads into McNulty's partner in the Marine unit.
Yeah,
who comes out
.
And in like one line just delivers the most bone-chilling Baltimore accent that I think I've ever heard. Like I rewound that so many times, I was like, oh my god, like I always just I'm trying to wrap my ears around that fucked up accent. Matt, I made you get a clip of this, so tell me about that.
So that first, before I play the clip, we finally get to use our Baltimore accent segment sting that we have never been able to do, but now we are ready for it. So
Baltimore accents, say this phrase out loud. Earn, Aaron, earn, and iron, earn. Damn, what the fuck? We really talk like that?
Balmerisms.
All right, so Balmerisms episode 205.
And granted, I'm not I'm not familiar enough with the the Mid-Atlantic waterman's accent to like differentiate between this and like the Delco accent from Mayor of Easttown.
Sounds basically
the same to me, but it's pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
Did you guys watch We Own This City?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Bernthal's Baltimore is just it's on another level.
I continue to be impressed by John Bernthal's ability to like do ethnic white accents.
So I was watching Wolf of Wall Street literally on Saturday, and he's doing a New York accent, and it's credible.
Yeah, yeah.
And people kind of sometimes dial it up too much because they watch My Cousin Vinny too many times. But Bernthal is like right there on the level that he's supposed to be.
I was just watching for the first time a show called The Bear.
Good.
My girl
finally started watching that yesterday. She fell asleep though.
Well, you know, hey, at some point you realize that you got to have your own shows, and that some shows you can't share.
Don't I know?
Here's a slight background on John Bernthal. This is all off Wikipedia, so I'm not fact checking any of it, but it's pretty great. Bernthal grew up in Cabin John, Maryland. He attended Sidwell Friends School, graduating in 1985.
Oh, shit.
After high school, he studied at Skidmore College in Saratoga Springs, New York, but dropped out. On the advice of his acting teacher, Alma Becker, he joined the Moscow Art Theater School in Russia. During his time there, he was a catcher for a Russian professional baseball team. So.
What the fuck? No way. No way. There's no fucking way. But then again, Russia's not known for baseball, so it's probably like...
That's true.
You know, like the 20 American defectors and John Bernthal.
Yeah, that's the whole...
That's the whole league. It's a beer
it's just
league.
Julian Assange, Ed Snowden. here's that clip of that accent for you.
I raised him on the radio. He's on his way in right now.
Appreciate that, officer.
Right now.
Just the pronounced AWN or something.
It's impressive.
Every O sound has like six extra syllables in it somehow.
Yeah, that to me, I'm like, that's a natural, another Baltimore guy who was cast. It's like, that's some dude who used to like copy edit for like the Baltimore Sun or some
or
shit.
Or a cop, you know what I'm saying? Straight up. Just a retired cop. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, but like, there are, as the show goes on, there's more and more characters who I'm like, oh, Baltimore does have a distinct accent. That's when you really are like, what is everyone on the show doing? Who's like, what is Dominic West doing? His accent is so trash that you're just like, oh well, he's hot, so it's all good. But John Bernthal also on The Bear,
By the way,
he did a perfect
Chicago accent, and I was like, fuck, this guy can do
he can do anything.
So yes, you guys are correct. It turns out the character was played by Jeffrey Fugit, an actual Baltimore Marine cop.
Of course.
Fugit?
Yep.
Two fuck tears it. And a bugget.
Fugit.
Fugit. Yeah, so in this arc, we find Jimmy McNulty on the boat he's been trying to get in touch with Omar so that Omar can testify against Bird. And Bubbles has helped him out to, you know, get him in contact. So he gives him a phone number. Once we see Omar again, what I love about like just this little bit of Omar that we get is they go clothing shopping for court clothes. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I want a whole series of this. This is actually the show. This is a show I want to watch. I want to watch McNulty and Omar just go shopping. And like, because like Omar, he has some fashion sense.
Yeah, I mean, he is a gay man. Like, he's not, like, he probably couldn't, he knows his way around a men's clothing store. Let's be honest.
I feel like as, not just he's like a gay man and he's a black man. And just like for him, he's like, no, style actually means something to me, Jimmy. So,
So I'm not just going to wear anything.
I'm not just going to wear anything that you want. Like, Jimmy's like, just, yeah, you know, wear a suit. And he's like, fuck off. But yeah, I think I could watch them go clothing shopping all day.
I also appreciate that the other characters in The Wire are basically like reacting to Omar the way we are reacting to Omar at this point, where mm-hmm. they're just like, I like this guy. I need to see more of him.
Yeah. 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 Everyone is just like as impressed with Omar as the audience is. You're like, wow, this guy's really got quite a story. But then McNulty's arc in this episode takes a turn as we go back to him and his hunt for the name / the peoples of the Jane Doe who we found in the water. Because he's made it his mission to find out this woman's name and inform her people that she's dead. Because he needs something to do this season. I mean, this season, he's not even in the detail. Like, the detail is doing all this work, and he's just kind of walking around being like, I need a reason to live that isn't sailing on a boat. So he goes over to the federal building, and he goes in right in time to see a monumentous event for anyone who remembers this. The INS placard is taken down and replaced with the Department of Homeland Security / ICE logo. So this was the beginning of ICE. So for me, it always blows my mind a little bit when I remember that like ICE was just something that was created during the War on Terror.
Yeah, to make it look like we were doing stuff.
Right. And it was just replacing one like set of initials
with
another.
They pulled the Stringer Bell.
Yeah,
they realized that their fucking package got fucked up.
That symmetry. Yep.
And they were like, all right, well, we gotta put a new plaque back there.
Yeah, change the name. Pull a WorldCom / MCI on it.
And then
yeah.
someone came in, like Bodie came in, and he's like, all right, what if we had Homeland Security and ICE? And then when one fucks up, they can blame the other. Like,
yeah.
Perfect.
It's so funny because I just like it's like when abolish ICE was a thing that people would say. I remember always the counter argument to that was just like, oh, yeah, well, let's just abolish ICE. And I was like, yeah, we could do that. ICE was made up in my lifetime.
It's not a thing.
It's not. Yeah, it's a completely made
up. You
were
alive when it didn't exist.
It's a sham to balloon government budgets. That's it.
Yeah, yeah. The government law enforcement budgets.
That's it.
They'll do anything to make a new, just a new group of dudes with guns who can go around.
Anybody who's done any kind of reading on the shit the FBI was doing with, they were just inventing terrorists out of whole cloth. Like dudes that were just like shop workers and was just like, what if I got you a bomb?
Yeah, I know.
Like dudes that were just minding their business, who
then
otherwise
would,
would not
it?
Have found this shit.
Then
like,
what would you do with it? I don't know.
It's crazy.
What
man.
Are you, a pussy?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I would bomb the president. Oh, jail for 20
Very
years.
Interesting. Yeah. Scribble.
It was so when the you know that whole like Michigander plot against the governor.
Which one?
The one that happened recently with the, what's her name? The governor of Michigan.
Whitman?
Whitman. Is it Whitman?
Yeah, Walt Whitman.
Yeah, Walt Whitman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Walt Whitman, the governor, right?
Yeah. I was just reading this article recently where it was just like, yeah, that that entire like plot to kidnap her was like 90% informants, and it was all just people who worked for the FBI and like two guys who were like, oh, I don't know, I'm just hanging out with my friends. Yeah. So if you want to know what government uses their law enforcement money for, it's that. But yeah, he shows up and he talks to some undocumented girls in New Jersey to see if he can find the name of the girl. And of course he can't. But Vince, you brought up a great point, which is that they pulled a Stringer Bell here. So mm-hmm. let's talk about that whole storyline. Stringer is dealing with a couple of things. Number one, he is dealing with the fact that D'Angelo is completely bucking
He's straying from the flock. Yep.
Yes. And that
I like,
is
I like that his that Donette, his baby mama, is trying to bring him back in the fold. And they have that scene like through the glass. Mm-hmm. And it just reminded me, like Donette reminded me of like the person who just like started at a tech company and like mm-hmm. believes all the founders fucking bullshit, where she's like, ooh,
no, they're gonna
unlimited,
change the world, D.
Unlimited PTO, so neato. And
yeah.
And D's just like, you know, they do that to make you work harder, stupid. Like, yeah, it's not a real thing. They're not gonna let you use
D,
it.
D, I'm telling you, you get free headphones.
Yeah. We got a bar in the back and you can drink beer while you code.
I sit on a beanbag chair.
Yeah. We don't even have cubicles. We just look at each other.
It's
like
open
a family
floor plan. But yeah, no, like Donette is trying to convince D to just, I mean, she's essentially just like, hey, be nice, because
yeah, I mean, she's you know, wrong. she's already sucking the dick of one, like literally sucking the dick of one of the bosses, and she's like, D, it doesn't taste that bad, trust me. I've got a great apartment, I've got a new car. Like, my kid's getting some pretty sick clothing. Like, it's great. Like, it's not the worst.
I wish you could smell this dick. It is so clean.
Yeah, it is nice. And, you know, yeah, she's like, half of it is her being dickmatized, but the other half of it is like her being like, this is a good deal that I've got, because she's, you know, she's working out great. It's working out great.
The
for
father of her child is in prison.
Yeah.
So he cannot provide for her and her young child.
Mm-hmm.
And the organization has stepped into that void.
Yeah, multiple voids.
The exactly, via the number two.
Yeah.
You know, Stringer Bell, who is just, he's so sinister.
Yeah, yeah.
Stringer, so freaking sinister.
Stringer is definitely, he's been kind
of. He's the guy who's also been seduced by like the tech founder myth.
Oh, totally.
So he's from being a gangster to being like a wannabe fucking wannabe CEO of WorldCom, which is great because it really only serves to make him worse at his job, but it gives him like this level of confidence about it.
Dude.
Yes.
And so, Stringer is another person who on rewatch is not very well served. Like, when you first watch the show, it's like, oh, he's the cool, calm, and collected one. He's like the savvy one. He's smart. He goes to school.
Like, he's learning about business.
When you really pay attention to what they're doing, it's just like, no, he's not smarter than everybody. And he is a freaking snake. And he isn't like some great business guy. Like, it's kind of ill rewatching it, seeing how Stringer, because like when I first watched it, I thought Stringer was the shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same.
And it was like, oh my God, how could you kill off Stringer? Spoiler he's so alert smart for people who are following along right now.
Yeah.
And then on rewatch, it's like, this guy sucks.
No, he's like a real life businessman, which is that he is
exactly.
Like, he's really good at projecting like an air of confidence and like convincing people that he knows shit, but he doesn't actually know anything. Like, he's not any more competent. Like, he's much less competent than Avon.
Yes. And he's,
Vince, you know what subtle means?
Exactly. Yeah. Have you ever heard of the word subtle?
Yeah.
And the guy's like, lay back and shit.
Bro, the most
Yes.
Watch it. I was like, bro, has anybody ever been more condescending than this fucking prick?
And then when he actually like is like, I was subtle with that. He turns on the TV, like, he sees he pulled it all off.
I was real subtle, kid. Like, yeah. Killed it.
And Stringer is just like, I have a midterm to study for. You, dude.
Well, because like adding to all of those things that are adding up, that are like combining in his character, like he's also the smug college freshman to some extent.
He's philosophy 101, and now he's figured out the meaning of the universe. Yes. Yeah,
and
sad.
And he's doing the thing that we pointed out in season one that he's done before, which is he does the home improvement thing where. Where Tim Allen talks to his neighbor Wilson and then gets some advice, and then he fucks it up in trying to like rehash that advice and trying to restate it. So I have a clip of that.
What are the options when you got an inferior product?
Well, if you have a large share of the market, you buy up the competition.
And if you don't?
Reduce price to increase market share. As your prices drop, your product eventually loses consumer credibility. The new CEO of WorldCom was faced with this very problem. The company was linked to one of the largest fraud cases in history. So he proposed
to change the name.
Exactly.
Y'all heard of WorldCom?
This is great because I feel like of all the people that you could take business advice from, I feel like an econ professor is like a community college econ professor is probably one of the worst humans on earth to take legitimate business advice from.
Right. I mean, it's like I get his thinking there where he's just like, I've got a business problem and you are so good at business that you're teaching it.
You are like, a bishop in the church of dollars.
And the sickest, saddest irony is that if he would have just come to the troops and been like, we need to put our heads together to come up with a solution for our problem, this world that we are actually experts in, collectively, they probably could have come up with
They would have come up with the exact same thing. He talked to his professor for no reason. Nothing was gained there other than him being like, I can compare this to WorldCom MCI.
He taught him metaphors, basically.
Yeah, and Stringer, has that brainstorm that I just think is fucking fantastic. I have a clip of that.
All right, Death Grip ain't shit.
You change up the name.
What else?
Yo, I got it. Change the caps from red to blue, right? Make it look like we got some fresh shit. Boom. And you know what else we might could do? Give each tower its own name, right? And then we do like some fake competing. So a fiend gets some bad shit from one, he go back to the other.
And there's a thinking man right there.
See, nigga, ain't that what the fuck I just say?
He's doing the Socratic method in a fucking funeral parlor. It's great.
Yeah. Oh man, and I love the Bodhi's, you know, suggestion to do some fake competing causes a real competition. Oh, he's like, that is what I just said. It's like, well, it's not exactly what you just said, but that's perfect. Just what brainstorming is, man. Come on. But yeah, so that is their plan. Their plan is to change the color of the caps and give it other names, and we'll see how that works in later episodes. And then also just with regards to what happens with D, Stringer and Avon have this conversation at the end of his arc where he's basically, it sounds like Avon is kind of suggesting that, like, hey, whatever happens, I tried.
You're working it out with D? Boy gotta find his own way. I'm saying, you know, I think we should keep reaching out to this kid, get something to him and his girl, I don't know, show him that we got a plan. Take some real estate, put it in D's name. He got something to come home to.
Do it. Thing is, what happened, happened, you know what I mean? Push come to shove. I mean, I've been fair to him, ain't I?
You've been fair. Too fair.
Which, to me, sounds a lot like Avon is saying, hey, if we have to, like, kill my nephew.
Yes, that's exactly
what he's saying. But I'm not sure.
I read it as he's no longer under my protection, whatever that means.
Yeah.
Like, whatever happens to this kid no longer is my problem.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's
and String being String, and you might say, well, he knows how String is. Mm-hmm. And so to say that, he basically all but begged him to do it.
Yeah, but I think it's supposed to
be ambiguous. It's like, yeah, he's just saying, like, if a nigga kill him in this prison,
yeah,
because he want to be a Muslim or whatever the fuck he want to do now, that's his problem.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right, and I'm still
eating bacon. You feel me?
Yeah. I don't think that Avon would ever think that Stringer has the balls to kill his own nephew. You know, I think in telling him that, I think you're 100% wise. Like that is him saying, like, whatever happens to him, he's no longer under my protection. I did the best I could, right? Yeah, that's all.
I'm out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Something, the older I get, the happier I am to do with things. To be like, I'm trying. Yeah, I did it. Hey,
yeah,
I did my part.
No, listen, that is true.
You know, like,
Half of growing up is giving up on people.
Yeah, no, seriously. Like, I showed up to a baby shower on time, and they started it late. And I was like, I got here on time. Yeah, I'm still going to leave at the time that I meant to leave. Exactly. I was here on time.
My side of the street is clean.
It's clean. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So now let's get into this is the final arc of the episode, the detail. So
we're getting the band. I mean, it's the main arc. We're getting the band back together.
Yeah.
We got the band back together, and we're starting a super group because now Bunk is on. Now Bunk is on the team. We got the fucking traveling Wilburys.
Freeman's on the team. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Freeman was already on the team. Bunk was not on the team before.
Well, right, but yeah, that's right. So
they
took
Freeman, and it was like, Bunk, you gotta be on the cases by yourself, and then Bunk, because Bunk is the bunk. He's like, I can't do this alone. I need help. Sorry.
So which is we got to point out that this starts with this starts with the conversation between Daniels and Carver in the office, which is a great scene, but I do have to quibble with one point. Like, so basically, you know. They're doing a lot of expository, like, heavy lifting. Daniels is explaining, like, why would I put you on this team when I know that you fucked me the last time, blah, blah, blah.
Why take a man who already burned you once? Now, why would I do that?
I have no fucking clue, Lieutenant.
Because he might be the last son of a bitch to try it twice.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You should only put people who fucked you on your team. Like, that doesn't.
Well, now that you fucked me once,
that logic,
I know you're not.
You should only have people that fucked you on your team.
Yeah.
Because they can't possibly do it again. Like, it's fucked up logic. But
yeah. Fool me twice. You wouldn't dare.
Right. But then the scene ends with Carver saying, same as it ever was. And I'm like, hold the fuck on. Carver is quoting the fucking Talking Heads now in the scene. Like, that feels like a very David Simonism. That's like even worse than all the cops singing a fucking Pogue song in the McNulty funeral scene. I'm like, this is even more of a stretch than that, I feel like.
Yeah. I first, when you brought this up, I was like, well, same as it ever was, wasn't invented by the Talking Heads.
But David Simon a super Talking Heads fiend?
I would not be surprised. Yeah.
Is that like a big boomer band? I don't know a lot about the Talking Heads. We didn't listen to that in Hollis, Queens, where I grew up. But
I
think if you're a Gen X intellectual, that Talking Heads is a fucking touchstone for you. Yes.
Yeah. Word. No. Totally. And the fact that you're right. That definitely was like that was David Simon being like, Talking Heads, man.
And I know this because like I feel like I'm of the generation that was like. When we were getting into music, we were like, okay, what do the Gen Xers tell us is cool? And one of the things they told us was cool was like the Talking Heads.
Yeah. But other than that, I thought the scene was perfect. And I love the ending of the scene in which he reveals to Kima and to Herc that he's in the detail. And I have a clip of that.
Well, come in.
Sweet bitch! Oh, don't be grabbing my dick, faggot!
Just, I,
That's a relic. That's a relic from 2003, man.
Yes, 100%. I just the fact that that Herc is like, he's so overcome with joy to be back with his boy Carve that he's just like, now I'm gonna grab him
and then grab his dick.
Dude. You know, the way friends do.
That's how men show affection.
Jock's going to jock, man.
Jock's going to jock, 100%.
I spent my entire, like, first 2 years of college, like, walking down the hallway, like, with my nuts covered, like, walking sideways.
Yeah, that was a thing.
It was just,
that
like,
was,
you know, if you
saw a friend,
if you saw a friend in the hall, you were going to hit each other in the nuts because dudes rock.
Come on.
Dudes rock. That's how we say hi. It's how we show love. You know, nowadays everybody's got therapy and crying. But back when I was a kid, we would punch each other violently in the private parts.
We didn't talk about our trauma on live journal.
We didn't have to take a serotonin reuptake, whatever it called. No, we just hit ourselves more in the dick. So yeah, the detail is we're getting all the band together, and you know, we get to see Freeman being reassigned to this detail, and I love this for multiple reasons. Number one, I love it because I love that Prez Belusky thinks that Freeman is a wizard, because when he shows up to the you know, to the detail. You know, they know is like Valchek wants Sobotka to be in trouble. That's all they know.
Yeah.
So they just have Frank Sabatka's picture on a fucking cork board and they're like, let's do something about this. And of course, what we
have,
that
they just have like a room and then they have one fucking random longshoreman and they're just like, well, this is our target. We got this random ass dude.
And any ideas?
Yeah.
Just like, kill him. No, we can't do that. But yeah, then Lester Freeman shows up and he knows who he is immediately. And I have that clip.
Cool Lester Smooth.
Hey.
What's happening?
Same fuck ups in the same shit detail, working at a same shit house kind of office. You people lack for personal growth, you know that?
It's a temporary posting. Rawls get you back at the end of the run.
If he wants me. Last I looked, I was high on his shit list.
Oh, then we did you a favor.
I wouldn't go that far. But fuck it. Who we chasing? Frank Sobotka?
How fucking good is he?
Just Prez is so impressed with him. He's like, he know everybody name. I tell you, he's smartest man in all of Baltimore. Like, I love Prez so much. He's grown on me as like this guy who's he's a violent piece of shit when he has a gun, but when he's behind a desk, you know, he's a perfect.
He's in his element.
He's a dumb cop whiz, which is perfect. And also the second reason I love that is because this is the fifth episode of the second season, and this is the first time that Freeman, and like, you know, that whole the 12 dead ladies in the can thing, and the detail, the whole like Valchek wants to get Sobotka. This is the first time they've ever connected that. Which means that not only do like police departments and whatnot like don't communicate, but like friends who are cops don't communicate either. Like the fact that this is the first time they are putting these pieces together is like, what the fuck? I figured they knew this already,
that's the sort of overall message 100%. Of the show is the dysfunction of this institution.
Yeah.
How they the roundabout way that they even luck into this investigation, which ends up being a major investigation, is just dumb luck.
It's dumb luck.
As they say, two Polacks pissing on each other's legs.
Yes.
Yes.
Right? It's complete and utter dumb luck. It's not the system working.
No.
It just shows you the dysfunction of it. And I thought, you know, the dopest line in the episode, was when they were like, yo, we don't even know what we're investigating him for. It could be drugs. It could be anything. And Herc's dumbass says, is there any other type of crime in this city? Like, he can't even fathom that any other crime exists besides drug war bullshit.
Yeah.
And we know, you know, because of the Greeks and the scope of their operations.
And the 12 dead girls.
Bruh, that it's way bigger than your fucking heroin buy and bust, right? Yeah. Rip and runs. Like, it's so much bigger than that. But that line just smacked me in the face watching this episode.
Yeah.
Before I talk to you guys, I'm just like, yo, this show is so fucking good, bro.
Yeah. It is incredible, like the narrowness of, and all the cops have like different, like they all have different like narrow worldviews on like what crime is important and what isn't. But like Herc is like that pure, like,
oh, he's a pure cop.
He's a pure cop, like street cop, beat cop, who's just like, oh, the only crime that exists is when black people, or white people sometimes, I gotta give us credit, sell drugs. And it's like, well, what about like selling people?
That's it. Like, no. But again, in the system that he's been reared in, that's what you think.
Yeah.
The only thing that matters is, you know, of course, you're solving murders, but most of the murders are tied to this drug trade.
Yeah.
So the drugs become the central focus of everything. It takes up all of the oxygen. So if you're a cop, there is no other crime besides drug crimes.
Yeah, that's how the war on drugs literally like ruined any kind of law enforcement that we had.
Of course.
You know, it's just like, if you thought that like police have always been bad. Oh, true. Of course. But do you know how much worse they've gotten since the drug war? They've gotten so much worse to the point where like there is not another type of policing that exists. The only other type of policing is like federal policing that just frames Muslims for like being near a mosque. Like that's the only other kind of policing that exists. And then occasionally, you know, you get a white collar criminal, but that person has to literally steal $1 trillion in order for anyone to be like, too far, Madoff. Just to round out this arc, they finally do get Bunk in after they try and fail. Bunk and Beatty try and fail multiple times to grand jury Sabatka, and no one talks at the docks.
You want us to dance with a grand jury? We will. What do you say? Any question?
I take the Fifth Commandment.
And if they offer you immunity to testify against your Union brothers?
I don't remember.
Don't remember what?
Nothing.
You want to throw your summonses? Throw them. You want to subpoena our records? Shit, you don't even need a subpoena no more. Our books have been open to the Justice Department for 8 years. We're here through Bobby Kennedy, Tricky Dick Nixon, Ronnie the Union Buster Reagan, and half a dozen other sons of bitches. We'll be here through your weak bullshit, no problem.
It just makes me yearn for a job with that kind of union support. You know what I mean?
Where, solidarity, kind of
Oh, that's cool, man. I wish I cared about an employer. I wish an employer cared about me.
Listen, when I was younger and I was taking classes at Brooklyn College, I was working at UPS part-time, and I was in the Teamsters Union even as a part-timer. And I swear to God, at least once every 3 weeks, our shop steward would come where I worked, was called a sword owl, and he would just start yelling at our supervisor.
Yeah.
Just as a show of force. Fuck this guy.
I love it.
He can't tell us what to do. He's not the boss of us. Fuck this dude. We have a union contract. This is our work. We get it done how we get it done. It's in our contract that we do it how we think it's safe to do it. And this guy could go suck a dick, basically. He would come up to the freaking sword owl once every 3 weeks just to berate our supervisor. Just to berate management.
That's so amazing,
and it's just to show the guys, like, yo, these people can't fuck with us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they cannot just treat us any type of way. You know?
I love that.
So what you're saying rings true to me. You know what I mean?
And I think that in general, you know, I've said this before, but like The Wire is a show about hating your boss. And
Yes.
And it's like beautiful to see, you know, this union, even though it's like it's tragic to see that it's all going
it's
downhill.
Falling apart, yeah.
And you're seeing more and more how, you know, the show is about how the bosses have all the power and they're going to continue gaining the power and they are ruining every industry. And it's, you know, just getting to see Frank Sobotka yelling at the cops and them having no recourse, even though, yeah, I want justice for those girls. Of course I do.
Of course.
But, you know, but I, as someone who is not a part of a union, just yearning for that.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
Like, oh, oh, that rules, man. Yeah, so then Bunk goes over to Daniels and is like, hey, can we join forces? And what I love about that scene is Daniels is like, no.
He's like, bruh.
He's I'm just here to like we're gonna do like a couple of low level arrests and then I get to be a, like a major.
Yeah, I learned my message. I learned my lesson trying to solve actual cases. Like that's not what we're here to do.
It's so dope. The way this is portrayed, because Daniels is a good boss.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a good. He's one of the good ones.
Yeah,
you know. And like, but even Dave's like, I know how this system works.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Helping you is only going to take me down. I can already see this. Yes. Like, stop.
100%. It just shows that, like, yeah, like doing the right thing and being a good boss do not necessarily meet in the
Almost
middle sometimes.
Every
bro.
Job, you have a choice between, you know, keeping your job and doing what the actual job is supposed to be.
Right.
And usually they're very different.
Yeah. 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 And, you know, sometimes you're like, no, I'm going to find a way to do what the job is supposed to be and keep my job. And it's like, even if you figure that out, all that work was for nothing.
Yeah.
It's, just, it's like it's a thankless task. And I think Daniels at this point has learned how thankless a task it is and that the risk of like having 13 dead Jane Doe's, you know, still
such is life.
Yeah, like having that on him is not worth it. But we'll see if he takes on those cases as we go on. He does allow Bunk to use their base and share information. So we'll see what happens. And yeah, that's the episode. Do we have anything we missed?
I did have a favorite scene. I did have like a joke that was so understated that I missed it the first time, which was Valchek gets a Polaroid and finds out that his surveillance van is in San Diego, and when Kima comes in to try and get a surveillance van for the detail, he goes, "Yeah, the van's on loan to the Southwest," and it's like,
yeah.
"You know, San Diego." And he's like, "Oh, yeah. I get it now."
Oh, I didn't get that Southwest. That is very funny.
Yeah,
I loved it because right
Matt,
after
we
that,
need a little vowel check. I feel like,
Hey, it's me, Frank the Bot. We gotta fuck Frank the Bot in the ass. Yeah. Oh, I got the van on lock.
He's got the perfect voice to just to be like the voice of a Looney Tunes weasel.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's a Looney Tunes rat.
Yeah,
it's just. But like what I love about this right after that, because he's like fingerprinting the fucking Polaroid. And then right after he's like, oh, yeah, it's on loan in Southwest. He just goes, fuck with my ass, will you?
Like, doing the most police work that he's probably ever done.
Yeah, that he's ever done.
Fuck with my ass, will you? Fuck my ass, 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 fuck my ass.
All right. Well, if I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, I would say solid B+. Vince, what would you give this episode if you had to give it a letter grade?
I mean, a lot of times we do this as a bit, but genuinely, I think this is a solid B+ of an episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And Waz, if you had to give this episode a letter grade, what would you give it?
I'd give it, by wire standards, I'd give it a B. But, like, it comes close to the B+ with the, like, the... There's like four Bunk fat jokes at Bunk's expense where I'm just like, where he's like, where Sabatka's talking about how you type in the machine to put the containers in. He's like, but if you have fat fingers, and Bunk makes the face like, watch it.
He's like, no offense.
Yeah, so yeah, I give it a B, solid B, because I got high, you know, standards for the
high standards. All right, so a little around that.
Also, it's a season two episode. I mean, like, how high can it really get to?
Yeah, it can only be a B plus. So solid B plus episode of The Wire and a solid A plus episode of Pod Yourself, The Wire. Big Waz, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking The Wire with us.
Of course, man. Anytime, fellas. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. Where can people find you?
At Big Waz on Instagram, ringer.com for all of my NBA work. And I even do some pop culture stuff for the company, too. And then if you're into politics at all, download Woke Bros wherever you get podcasts. Me and my brother Nando Vila, we do that show. It drops every single Thursday morning. Yeah. The name Woke Bros is meant to be ironic, but nobody ever gets that. But whatever. Go listen to the podcast.
Check out the podcast and check out everything that Big Waz does over at The Ringer. Once again, thank you so much for coming on. Patreon.com/Frogcast, $8 tier gets you a shout out. Vince, we have a few shout outs.
Oh shit.
All right, are you ready? You get a shout out, you get a street name. Here we go. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. First is Kevin Day.
Day. Oh, we call this guy M. Night Shyamalan.
What? Why? Oh, M. Day Shyamalan.
Yeah.
All right. You worked hard on that one. All right. Next is Robbie Kreider.
We call this guy Matt's mom because he's a sea writer.
Wow. You bitch.
Yeah.
All right. I'll take it. Frank DeBock. Next is David Hernandez.
Oh, yeah. We call this guy Mets because, you know, Keith Hernandez. They're all gonna be winners, but
yeah. All right, David Hernandez, Mets. That's good. All right, two more. Stephen or Stefan Harrington.
I think it's Stefan, right?
Stefan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't know there was a third one.
Yeah, we call this guy Stefan Wolf.
Oh my God, that's really good.
Is it? You're like, yeah. Okay. See, sometimes I like mail it in and you hate it, and then other times I mail it in and you're like, great. Oh, that's good.
All right, and last is Nicholas O'Sullivan.
Oh man, that feels redundant. Like we already like you're Sullivan, but you're O'Sullivan. Like how much more Irish do you need to be? We call this guy the Mick.
All right, the Mick. Those are your $8. Goddamn, I put gum in again at the wrong time.
Yeah, you did. I mean, it's always the wrong time.
Those are your $8 shout-out patrons of the week. Once again, go to patreon.com/broadcast. Sign up for the $8 tier. You will get yourself a street name. And once again, if you haven't gotten one in a while, and I know for a fact that one of you months ago emailed me about this, and I cannot find the email, so I don't know who you are. Please email us again and let us know that you haven't gotten the name. Broadcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030. We need to do a mailbag episode soon.
We will.
All those voicemails, yeah.
We got to get to the voicemails.
Yeah.
Thank you again.
You can also just email us a voice memo if you prefer at frotcast@gmail.com.
Right. Yeah. So questions, comments, concerns, and voice memos. But also 415-275-0030 for the Google Voice. All right, everybody. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, if you come at the king, you best not miss. I ended Irishly. Look. If you had one shot, or like three shots, multiple shots to sell drugs in Baltimore and not fuck up the package, could you do it? Cause Ziggy Sabaka cannot. His palms are sweaty, knees weak, dong is heavy. Got Froggy on his corner already, punkin' Ziggy. He's angry, and Froggy still don't have his money ready. He fucked up, and cheese won't be forgetting what he lent out. His whole gang surrounds him now. They open the
the car, but Ziggy won't come out. Slap him around, he says his jackets were too foul. They throw him around and they steal his Camaro. Snap back to reality, ooh, better ask Nicky for some cash money. He fucked up the package, Nicky can't lend him money. No, he don't have it, he knows his cousin's on the ropes. It don't matter, he's broke. Nick lives in his mom's home, his job's sad and he knows bureaus needs those chemicals. That's when he talks to the Greek again, yo. They do trust Nicky, better go capture those cans and hope Ziggy will talk about it. Ziggy himself into thinking that he is a kingpin. It's clear he'll never ever grow up, he's had more than one shot. Do not fuck a package up, this opportunity comes right as the cops do. Frank will delude himself into losing his ships and his unit. He meets up with that dude's bureau, gonna get himself shot. So vodka steals cans from the docks, this opportunity comes right as the cops do. Escaping from my hole that is gaping. I like when guys are taking up my ding and they put my take it in the butt, make me lick cum and put it in my ass, put it on my dick and make me sing songs about a slick Rick. Once upon a time not long ago when I used to put my dick inside other dicks, and yo, I'm mad, LA mad. I flippy flat flap in the cap with the drap, and everyone's sucking on dicks in the fix, and everyone's getting their clicks with my dicks. Sucky, sucky, fuck. Ooh. Okay, okay. Yeah, Eminem, Fleminem. Okay, let's do this. Chorus time. That's an awful hot coffee pot. Can you sing a song or not? Will you sock my cock and make me flock like the birds that fly in the sky, bitch? Sucky fuck fuck and this shit. Put it in the dick. Michelle Pfeiffer. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I could stop. I will stop. I'm gonna stop. Will I stop? I stop or not, you can't make me stop. And everyone knows that movies are flops, and everyone wears socks, and the cats are cops, and everyone knows that dogs also cops. And MacGuffin, MacGuff, Bruff MacGuff, make a dark bark bark and other stuff. I'm looking at books, so many to read. Most are written by crooks. Crooks write books, books and hooks. The hook of the book is Brooklyn, Brooklyn Finn. I put it in, yeah. All right. I'm going to fade it. You know what? I'm going to fade it out myself. I have that power. Anyways, see you next week.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.